Welcome to Investor Talk Radio, hosted by Kurt Davis. During the show, Kurt will share tips and strategies as well as guest interviews on how you can become a successful real estate investor. Kurt Davis was a former chef for 11 years until one day had the opportunity to take a leap of faith, left cooking, and became a full-time real estate investor. Kurt has been building his personal portfolio of rental property and at the same time has helped over 500 investors around the globe purchase cash-flowing rental properties. He is a licensed realtor who has achieved multi-million dollar club status, and he is also very active in the local real estate investment club. And now, here is your host, Kurt Davis.
Hello, and welcome to Investor Talk Radio. I'm your host, Kurt Davis, and today we're going to be talking with Craig Jennings, who is the owner and founder of Buy Memphis Now, which is a real estate company in Memphis, Tennessee. Welcome to the show, Craig.
Hey, Kurt. Thanks for having me.
Now, listen, I'm going to ask you a series of questions today so our listeners can get better familiarized with you and your company. So one of the first questions I usually like to ask is tell the listeners a little bit about who you are, where you're from.
Well, I've grown up in West Tennessee, around the Memphis area, pretty much my entire life, since I was basically 3 years old. And I've always kind of had entrepreneurial spirit, even as a kid, starting the, you know, lemonade stands, car washes, things like that that most kids do. But I've always had a passion for real estate. My father always owned rental houses, and my summer jobs usually consisted of painting the rental houses, cutting the yards, doing things like that. And it was funny, from a very early age, I just always had a love for real estate and learning about it and was fascinated about it. And it was kind of funny, some of my first book reports when I was in fifth and sixth grade, one of them was Donald Trump's The Art of the Deal. And it was kind of funny, a lot of the other kids were reading Beverly Cleary books and I was reading Donald Trump autobiographies. And it's just something that's always been in my soul and still is today.
So basically, because you were around real estate because of your father when you were younger, that was probably a huge part on how you got involved later in life.
Exactly. And I still do real estate deals with my father today. He's almost 80 years old, and he still is just obsessed with it. It's never been his full-time gig, but he still loves it the same way I do. And we still talk real estate a lot, and every once in a while do a little deal together.
Excellent. Now, how many years would you say you have been investing?
I've been investing as a full-time investor, meaning I don't have any other job, no other source of income, for about the last 11 years.
Now, didn't you own a Homevestors franchise at one point in time?
I did, and that was 11 years ago, and that's when I first started. I'd owned a couple of rental properties that my father got me into, and I knew I wanted to do it full-time. So on one trip with my father, we saw an advertisement for the Homevestors franchises. And for you that may not know what it is, most people know Homevestors by their big yellow billboards that used to be very prominent that said, "We buy ugly houses," and big yellow and black signs. And most people may not know Homevestors, but they know the "We Buy Ugly Houses." So we started seeing those. And at that time, this was probably 2003, the market was very different than it is today. It was really hard to find a deal. The market was red hot. The subprime loans were in full force every year, even in markets like Memphis that aren't known to have huge increases or decreases in price. We were seeing, you know, 5 to 7% appreciation every year. We had markets like California going up 15 to 20% a year. So the real value was in finding the deal, and that's why we spent a lot of our money on the advertising and the billboards of finding really good deals in distressed markets and things like that, and we did pretty good with that.
That definitely sounds incredible. So basically, Homevestors, the franchise, that was kind of your real first main step into becoming a full-time investor.
It was, and you know, it was basically pushing me out of the nest. It was something, I made a lot of mistakes, and quite honestly, I didn't know what I was doing right when I did it, and we went full in. And I, you know, made a lot of mistakes, paid for them, but overall we came out real good. And if I could change things, I wouldn't. I'm no longer with Homevestors. I stayed with them about 5 years, and I still have a great relationship. Talked to Ken Chanel, the owner up at Homevestors, a good friend still. Stayed with them until the market changed so much when the big crash hit. The value, the paradigm changed. the old paradigm was at that time, the value was in finding the deal. After the market crashed, the value became in the value was your ability to sell the house. So the paradigm changed. It didn't make sense in that when there was tons of foreclosures for me to be putting billboards all over town that I'll buy a house. I mean, I would be getting 500 calls a day with people that would sell me their house at that time. So the market changed, and as a small businessman, I had to change also.
Totally understand. Now, do you currently own any rental properties of your own?
Yes, I do. I love real estate, and I'm always looking at new things to do. Probably with my apartments and everything, I own about 25 myself. And, you know, one thing that's changed in my head, I used to have this dream of owning 100 rental properties and doing that. And I'm not against that or opposed to that. But one thing I've seen just through experience is find a number that's comfortable. My number is about 25 properties. And I know if I can get those 25 properties paid off, then something's wrong with me if I can't live on that money. I've gone from putting stuff on 30-year mortgages. I read the book that everybody read, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And, you know, he had a lot of good advice, but a lot of advice that is maybe a little better on books than it is in the real world. I found the stuff I've put on 15-year mortgages. It's a little painful at first. But if there's one thing I can say that is real, I've learned and has been the biggest advice I'd give to anybody is, if it doesn't work on a 15-year mortgage, do not buy the property, period. Because I'm 39 years old. If I put something on a 30-year mortgage, I'm going to be almost 70 years old before that's paid off. And that doesn't do anybody any good except maybe my grandkids. So if I could give one piece of advice and something I've learned, there's nothing wrong with having a lot of homes. But I would go with the strategy of having a lower amount of homes and really work hard at keeping them running right and getting them paid off quickly, as opposed to just leveraging yourself up with 100 properties and trying to live on that cash flow.
Well, the good thing is the Memphis market allows for an investor to still put a property on a 15-year loan and still cash flow if the property is purchased right. I can tell you that my wife and I, the last 5 properties or so, and everyone that we're purchasing now, we're putting on 15-year loans. And with the creative way that I structure my personal deals is I'm still making a minimum of $200 a month cash flow after property management expenses on 15-year loans. I know that if I put them on a 30-year loan, I could probably cash flow close to $400 a month. But, you know, I'm kind of in the same boat as you. I'm 35, so I'd like to be able to start reaping the benefits, call it around the age of 50, 52.
Sure. I mean, you want to be able to be young enough to enjoy it.
Absolutely. Now, Craig, you own a company here in Memphis that's a full-service real estate investing firm, and it's called Buy Memphis Now. Tell us about it.
Well, Buy Memphis Now is it's the term, you know, the term I'm losing my head here to the term of just of a wholesaler. They can't have a bad name, just like, you know, a car salesman can have in some markets. There's really good ones. There's really bad ones. We're a turnkey provider, and that's the term I was looking for. We're a turnkey provider, and in that it means Memphis does have unique, very unique things. In fact, we can buy homes that are in quality neighborhoods that actually cash flow, and that's very unique to Memphis. So what we specialize in is using our knowledge to know the areas of town we would like to buy in and the areas we would want to rent homes in, overseeing the renovation product, and then selling them to investors and helping them to have a low maintenance. And the bottom line key goal is to have a piece of real estate that offers them the safety of real estate that operates kind of like a mutual fund or something like that, that returns a solid investment with very little headache that can come with being a landlord, especially out-of-town landlord. You can just it's really, really a tough thing to do to try to own rental property and be from out of town. You get a good team.
So really, in a nutshell, the kind of service, you know, just so people understand out there, a turnkey provider is basically you purchase the distressed home, you make the repairs, get a tenant in place, and then you advertise it to prospective out-of-state or out-of-country buyers, correct?
That's exactly right.
Now, how long have you been providing this full-service turnkey-style program to investors?
Well, the story of how I kind of got into doing that, the business kind of came to me. It was, as I was saying earlier, I had the Homevestors franchise, and at that time, the big market was retail. the prices were going up so much. You'd get a good deal on a house, you'd go in, you'd fix it up. Anybody could get a loan, so you'd fix it up, sell the house, and make your profit that way. Well, the market started changing, and you know they stopped the subprime loans, thank goodness. But I started getting a few calls through the being a part of HomeVestors and having the franchise connections nationwide. You know, I had somebody looking. We had one database that had all of our properties listed. And just by default, some of the properties I'd fixed up to sell retail, all of a sudden the people I'd hoped would get loans for it couldn't get loans anymore because the banks tightened up so much. So someone was on the HomeVestors website from California, saw a house that I was trying to sell retail for, I think, $65,000. And they called me up and said, is this a joke? And I was like, no, it's not a joke because we're selling this house for $65,000. And he said, well, what would this house rent for? And I told him it was $800. And they're like, they thought I was a con artist or something else. I'm still friends with the guy today. But he could not believe that you could actually buy real estate, get it financed, and have it not just be positive, but be positive by, you know, $200-$300 a month. It's something that I didn't realize was so unique to Memphis. And, you know, to this day, a lot of our business comes from California, New York, and Florida, where the areas are, you know, more expensive, and those things don't really work in their markets.
And those investors that are out-of-state investors, like you said, California, New York, Florida, maybe the Pacific Northwest, they might think that this is too good to be true because the house that you're selling here for, call it $60,000 to $80,000, is a house that would sell there for $300,000.
That's right.
Now, tell us a little bit about what the Professionals is.
Yeah, well, Professionals Realty Group, it's something that we it's a brokerage. Basically, it'd be like a Century 21, but they're based over in Australia. And they're one of the bigger, I think they're the second biggest real estate brokerage firm in Australia. And they also have offices in New Zealand and some parts of Singapore and places like that. But before I got with the Professionals Realty Group, probably right in, I guess it'd be 2009, right when we started printing up all the money, one of the effects of us during all these bailouts and the government printing up all this money, which a lot of people, you know, here in America, we may not feel it day to day, we don't realize it. It devalued our dollar tremendously, and a lot of people don't realize it did that. So at that point, I was going through another mini crisis in my business. You know, that was right at the crash, and you know, all of a sudden, my investors couldn't get loans. So I started looking online at the U.S. dollar compared to some other foreign markets. And one thing I noticed is the U.S. dollar compared to the Australian dollar was at 48. The Australian dollar was worth 48 cents to the U.S. dollar. In a matter of about 2 years, the Australian dollar went to $1.09 compared to our dollar.
Now, what does that mean exactly? Explain that a little bit more.
Okay.
When that happened, what did you see start happening here in Memphis?
Well, I was actually not trying to toot my own horn. It was done out of strict desperation. I knew that I started looking online and seeing that some of these countries they're more apt to buy hard assets, meaning real estate, land, things like that, than they are as Americans. You know, we've had grandma buy us a Walmart stock certificate when we're little kids, and we've just been trained in this Wall Street mindset to, you know, invest in mutual funds, invest in this. And they just don't have that in these other countries, and I started to find that. And then I also looked at the average home price in Australia. It was about $325,000 average price. So with the currency more than doubling in value compared to ours, their average price and their propensity to buy real estate as opposed to stocks and bonds and paper assets, I just recognized there was an opportunity there. And it was funny because at the time, besides going to Canada or Mexico, I'd never been out of the U.S., so I was driving home wondering how I was going to keep my business going, and I popped in a Walmart and I bought a $30 international calling card and went home. And I'd never made an international phone call before, but I started cold calling realtors and brokers in Australia And it was funny because I was up, and now I talk at night all the time to Australians, but it was so funny. I remember sitting on my front porch at midnight calling people because it was, you know, 10, 11 o'clock over there. They're almost on the exact opposite time frame. Sitting over there calling, cold calling Australia with my $30 calling card. And there was such acceptance for it. For not only do they love real estate and they recognize that their dollar was going up in value, culturally, Australians and Americans do business very similar. There's some other markets where there's very, very different business types of way of doing businesses, like in some of the Asian markets, we're very different. But it was just a perfect fit between New Zealanders and Australians and Americans, and that went on to become a very big part of our business, and still is today. We still deal with a lot of repeat customers from New Zealand and Australia. I've been over there quite a bit, but that's what prompted me to buy into this Professionals Realty Group over there. They're one of the biggest. They approached me about opening a brokerage in the U.S., and we've opened now, I think, 5 brokerages in different markets around the U.S., and we deal with not only U.S. clients, but also deal with a lot of clients overseas looking to buy in these markets where the fundamentals work.
Now, would you say that being a part of Professionals with your arrangement with them has helped bring a level of, you know, maybe like a sense of security and safety for that foreign investor looking to buy here? Because, you know, there's a lot of things that could happen. Foreign clients want to buy over here. They don't really know who to work with.
Right.
So it's really something that's kind of, with your relationship, has made it very, very safe and secure for the foreign investor to look and consider purchasing.
It gives us credibility. Sure does, because they've seen the name. It's a very well-established name over there. And I'll tell you this, when we joined Professionals, the president came in, he said, look, this is a new thing. He recognized how big the market was for foreigners buying U.S. property. He said, if we get one client that comes over and feels like he's being dealt with wrong, and it doesn't mean, you know, he has a real estate investment that doesn't go the way he thought it would, but if he feels like a client's being treated bad, and if there's ever an unhappy customer, they monitor it very closely. They're not going to, like I said earlier, there's some guys in our business that are unscrupulous at selling areas that I wouldn't buy in if you gave me a home free, and they monitor it very, very closely. And if there's, we haven't had any complaints yet, but if there is one, they'd get to the bottom of it, and it's not a big enough deal for them that they can afford bad publicity over this. So they are very, very cautious of who they allow to be in their system. And the ongoing business relationships, they monitor it very closely. And if there ever is a problem, they get to the bottom of it and make sure things are going right.
Sounds fantastic, Craig. I mean, that kind of just gives the listeners a little idea of the stand-up guy that you are, that Professionals would allow you to be a part of the program. So the next question I want to ask you about is something that I feel is very, very important that sometimes really gets overlooked by a lot of investors and companies, because, I mean, let's face it, you know, there's lots of people that are selling properties, but property management is probably, I would say, maybe one of the single most important parts of an investor's experience. That's what's really going to keep their ship afloat. Tell us a little bit about the property management that you offer. You know, maybe touch a little bit on, you know, if you want to talk about what the fees are, but talk about property management and what maybe makes management different.
Right. You know, I'd say, you know, I know that in commercial real estate, they say the three most important things are location, location, location. In residential, I'd say it's management, management, management. You can overpay for a piece of real estate and have good management and still have a solid investment. You can get a screaming deal on a house and have poor management and you'll lose your shirt. There's nothing more important than the management. We've seen it. We've learned a lot doing it. We've made a lot of mistakes in the beginning. And it's single-handedly the most important thing that we do. Some of the things that we do with our management that we've just through trial and error, we're learning, we're trying, and something that we do different than we feel like most management companies do is we're trying to sign mostly 2-year leases right now.
Now, let's talk about that, because that is something that when I first heard that, I thought to myself, well, why in the world would a tenant agree to a 2-year lease? You know, most other management companies are only requiring a 1-year lease, but when I heard about the 2-year lease, I thought, you know, why would a tenant agree to that? But the more I thought about it, I mean, it's great for the management company and most importantly for the investor to keep that tenant in there another solid year. Reduces the amount of turnover and expense to prep the home for the next tenant. How did the 2-year lease come about?
Well, it not only does the turnover, you know, there is the cash aspect of the turnover, and that kills you. Anybody that's owned rental properties, they know how somebody that turns over every year, it just absolutely kills your cash flow. No matter what, you're going to spend $1,000 getting a house ready again. Now, there are security deposits and things like that to offset that. But what's probably being missed in all this, yes, having a 2-year lease is great. Yes, it's great not having to get a place ready. But one of the things this really does, it's a screening process. The people we want renting a house from us is not the transient type, the people that are wanting to move. I know, Kurt, you just moved into your house, and I moved into my house. If somebody told me I was going to have to move in a year, they'd have to hold me at gunpoint to make me move. We want people that have the mindset of turning this house into their home, not just a living quarters. So it's as much of a screening process to get the type of person that would want to sign a 2-year lease. That's the type of tenant we want, and that's probably the most important part of it that people don't realize. It's a screening tool. We want the person that envisions we're going to stay here 2 years. I don't want to pack my stuff up and move in that type of year. Because people that have the mindset that they don't mind moving in a year, it's usually because they've been forced to move from year to year. And that's, you know, it indicates lack of stability and everything else, a lot of red flags. So it's as much a screening tool as it is anything.
Sure. Now, one thing before this interview, I was browsing your website to look at the property because, you know, a lot of investors want to know, you know, what kind of returns they can expect and, you know, cash flow and things like that. And those are very important. You know, that's some of the reasons why people get in this. But I see kind of a trend on your site with the price points of the properties that you sell. You're selling properties anywhere and call it the $60,000 to $100,000 range with. But from the sold properties that I've seen on your site, the ones that looked to have sold fairly quickly, those are probably in the $70,000 to $90,000 is probably the sweet spot for where most of your clients are wanting to purchase.
It is, and we try to lead them on that. We would tell them that's the stuff that we want to manage. The stuff I buy for myself is in that price range. Some of the mistakes, you know, that I try to let my clients learn off my mistakes. When I first got in this, I looked at a house. Man, I can be all in this house for $30,000. It rents out for $750. That's a cash flow machine. And then I had the thing like we talked about earlier, the turnover, the problems, the theft, just the little problems you get with the lower priced homes. I'm learning you're better off, you know, within reason, buying the stuff that's a little nicer, the stuff that, you know, that we want to manage, the stuff where we can get the tenant that comes in and stays 2 or 3 years. And when you get stuff like that, you get capital appreciation. You get the home that's going to go up in value. You're going to get just less headaches, less staying up at night with, you know, some person that's behind on the rent. You're wondering if they're going to be able to get caught up. All those little things life's too short to deal with. And when I first started in this business, obviously, the $35,000, $40,000 house is what every client said they wanted. I want a house for $35,000, rents for $750. That sounds great. And it wasn't – I had the best intentions in mind when I first started working with clients, but hell, I sold them what they wanted. And now, you know, I've become established enough in my business. If somebody comes to me and says, Craig, I want a $40,000 house, it's not that I can't get you one, but I won't sell you one because I don't want my name attached to it.
Absolutely. And plus, even though you've provided the service they wanted, somehow or another, it always seems that you were the guy that sold them that house.
Yeah.
Now, also looking on the site, you know, understanding that the sweet spot that we see is anywhere in the $70,000 to $90,000 range, it looks as though for clients who purchase conventional financing doing 20-25% down, just kind of a ballpark average of what I'm seeing is the cash flow is anywhere in the neighborhood of $275,000 to $325,000 with anywhere of a return of about 16-20%, and that's assuming that they're doing 20-25% down financing, correct?
Right, and you're referring to the return on their down payment.
Correct.
So cash on cash return.
Correct.
Yes, yeah, we're able to see that. Rates have stayed really low here. While prices have gone up in Memphis, they're still among some of the lowest in the country. And I want to stop one thing and say, Memphis is not the lowest priced real estate in the country, but we feel like we're at a real sweet spot. You know, we're not Miami Beach, but we're also not Detroit.
Well, one thing that I've noticed too, in the time I've been involved in Memphis real estate is that I've seen other markets come and go. You know, Phoenix was super hot at one point, but now you don't hear about it as much. But the one thing that I have seen through all these other markets coming and going and the ones that are still around is that Memphis is still held relevant with pricing and the price-to-rent ratios. Memphis still has very high rents for the price points here.
It really does, and there's several reasons for that. Memphis is, for lack of a better term, we're a blue-collar city. Our biggest industry is distribution. FedEx is headquartered here, and they employ right at 30,000 people. And it's not that that what it provides is a lot of working class jobs. We're a real working class type of town, and we have not been overbuilt over the years. We haven't had these wild swings where builders came in and built and built. Now, we had pockets of that, but for the most part, we did not vastly outbuild our population growth like you saw in a lot of cities. Probably the biggest example would be like Las Vegas or Phoenix at one time. Phoenix
has happened in Atlanta as well.
Atlanta and Las Vegas, you're right, is where they outbuilt the actual population growth. Now Atlanta's got great potential to fill that in, but it's going to take some years. And Memphis, we just never had that. We never had the wild springs and swings in price. We may have had some years where we went up 7% appreciation during the real go-go days, but we've never had these crazy swings in prices where stuff's, you know, being sold three times in one year, and it's each person's marking it up in their 20,000, and it's just going up and up like you're seeing that in Phoenix now.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, let me ask you this, Craig, because here's a question that I've had people ask me quite often. Now, it's no secret that Memphis is considered one of the top cities to invest in for single-family homes. But what about people come to you who are looking for multifamily? And I'm not talking about like a duplex. I'm talking about somebody who's looking for maybe like a small apartment. What are your thoughts on the Memphis multifamily market?
Well, I'll tell you, even before I was doing this full-time, when I was just buying some real estate, I bought some apartments. It's called Belvedere Gardens. And the numbers looked great. Each unit I was buying was about $12,000 a unit. They ran out for $500. You know, I was like, golly, that's a cash cow. Well, you know, I made two mistakes. They weren't class C, but they were B minus. There is a lower class, lower income type of tenant. It's the most money I've ever lost on a real estate transaction. And by that, I'm not what I've seen. I did one thing. I didn't have my management team in place at the time. It was a mistake of mine. So I probably should have been able to make money if I'd have been a more experienced investor. But the other thing that I would say, there is a market for multifamily here, but I would trend towards the higher end. I'm not saying A+, the super high ritzy places, but I would not try to get in a fringe type neighborhood in the apartments. If so, the biggest thing is going to be all management. It's something I would tend to stay away from. It's you just get a lot of, you know, when you're getting lower rents around $450 to $500, if there's any turnover, then it's going to kill a full year of cash flow easy. And one of the main things you get in a lower income type apartment dwelling, you're going to get people that are used to moving in and moving out of places, and that's what I found was the toughest things here. But there are some opportunities for it. I recently, North Mississippi is just south of Memphis. We're right on the state line of Mississippi and Tennessee. And I recently just bought a little 10-plex apartment down in a college town of Oxford, Mississippi. So I'm not saying I wouldn't do it, but I would stay away. I would be real wary of the areas you buy in. Don't be fooled by the numbers. Numbers can be deceiving, especially on lower-end apartments. They can look too good to be true.
I know a lot of people come to us and they'll, you know, rather than focus on the area, they're more focused on the high return that they're hoping to get. Not necessarily cash flow, just the high return, and that's usually the hardest number to hit. And I really think that people need to focus more on a quality investment and location with property management. Because long term, the house that has lower return on investment will probably fare better than the house with a little bit higher return because of less turnover and things and whatnot. And this kind of transitions into my next question. You know, are there areas of Memphis that you stay away from? Are there just areas out there that you don't want to have anything to do with?
Absolutely.
Why?
Because I feel like the future of the area is not bad. Memphis is like almost every city. We've got a really good, you know, million-dollar homes area, and we've got our bad areas. And there's some areas of Memphis that I see probably half of our industry, some of these smaller guys that sell properties, I see them selling these areas. One of the areas I would say is an area I call Fraser, 38127. There's not much job growth there. I don't see the growth, and I don't see the population base. And, yes, that's where I could get a client, a $35,000, $40,000 home, fully renovated with, you know, I could get a tenant in place at first. But long term, the house, the only person, when you get into an area that's almost all rentals, low home ownership, all you have exit strategy wise is to sell it to another investor. And Kurt, what's an investor going to want to do if he's buying a home from you? What's he going to want to pay you?
What the house is worth.
Or as low as he can get it for.
Exactly.
Just like we do when we buy. He's going to want to give you as little as he can for it. So, you know, when you're buying a piece of real estate, you want to look at exit strategies. Your exit strategies are limited in the lower end areas because the only person, a lot like a duplex in a bad area, the only person that's going to buy that is not going to be a homeowner. It's going to be an investor that's going to want to do what all investors do, get the best deal they can, which means the lowest price for you, as opposed to going in an area where you get a sense of ownership, where you look around, there's flowers planted, there's pride of ownership in the neighborhood, a neighborhood watch association. It doesn't have to be a ritzy area, but it's an area where somebody would want to move into and raise a family and feel safe, and you're going to feel good managing it. And when you go to sell that house down the road, one of your exit strategies is going to be selling it on the retail market, where you get top dollar for it, where you get to experience the capital appreciation, things like that. So that's things to consider. It's maybe not stuff you can realize today as far as, you know, it doesn't put meat on the plate as far as cash flow goes, but it's money that's there that's real money that down the road when you go to sell it, it'll be there for you, and it'll be a more pleasant experience for you all over.
And the more exit strategies you have for your properties, the better. Like you said, sell to potential retail down the road. You know, the nice thing is with a home and a better area like what you're doing is, you know, there's the possibility of retail, but it will be an even more attractive investment sale. You know, you could advertise it as a rented out cash flowing investment property 5-10 years down the road, and surely prices will have to have increased by then.
Yes, and we're seeing that trend in Memphis heading that direction, get prices increasing.
How would you say Memphis compares to other markets? And when I say other markets, the markets right now that are doing well, say, for example, I know Atlanta's a popular market right now. Dallas and Houston are kind of coming into the fold here. I know that prices are a little bit higher there. Charlotte, North Carolina, places like that. But how would you say Memphis kind of compares to them?
Well, Memphis is probably going to be it's hard to say a percentage. I'd say we're probably going to be 30% cheaper for an average. If we're comparing the same – if we're using the basis of income, like a house that rents for $900, I would say Memphis would probably be $20,000, $30,000 cheaper to buy a house here. But, you know, so better cash flow here. As far as city growth, if you want to take a city like in Atlanta, like a Dallas, like a Houston, they're much larger cities. Area-wide, Memphis is only about 1 million people. I forget what Atlanta's 4 or 5 million. Dallas, Houston are very similar size cities. Huge growth, but also they've been, you know, the prices are a little higher. So they don't cash flow quite as well. I think the prospects of the home going up in value are as good in Memphis as they are there from a percentage perspective. But in the meantime, I think the cash flow works better in a smaller market like in Memphis.
Absolutely. I totally agree. You know, we're kind of winding down here, Craig. I only got a few questions left for you here. You know, can you give us your take on what you see for the future of the Memphis market? I know a lot of people, when they start researching markets, you know, a lot of them are concerned about growth and job growth in the market, property appreciation, things like that. What I mean, if you had to look into your crystal ball, the Craig Jennings crystal ball, call it 5-10 years down the road, what would you see? What would you think you would see?
Well, here's what I'll see, and I, you know, probably one of the most significant things we've seen over the past 2 to 3 years. If we go from a 5-year window going backwards to start out with, the biggest change was a lot of it was the foreigners coming in from Australia, New Zealand, Singapore, buying up real estate all over the U.S. That was the big hot trend. Then about 2 years ago, we saw the hedge funds from Connecticut, Wall Street, all these big hedge funds started buying. And quite honestly, because I'd be at a lot of the auctions, they would pay for whatever. And they artificially drove the prices up a little. Now we're starting to see them somewhat just taking the real estate they own, getting it all shored up, and they're starting to not buy as many. We've gone through a lot of the foreclosures, and prices are starting to really stabilize, not just stabilize, go up. The fundamentals are still there. But what I'm starting to see, and I've had a lot of people tell me they agree with me and tell me they don't agree with me on this, but this is just, we're looking at a crystal ball, so this is just my guess. I think the government is going to try to stimulate this economy more and more. We're going to start seeing them getting more and more lackadaisical on these loans they're going to do. We're already starting to see different programs that are coming out. I don't know if we'll ever get the crazy liar loans that we used to have where people would have stated income, could go in and just say they made them out and get a loan on that. And everybody always says, well, we'll never do that again. Well, we have very short memories as Americans. I mean, you know, we tend to forget things like 9/11. You know, we don't forget, but it doesn't stay at the front of our mind. We don't remember the pain of everything. We don't remember the pain of doing all these crazy loans and people that couldn't afford them getting these loans. And I'm starting to see little inklings here and there. I was talking to a mortgage broker yesterday, and I had a client trying to get a loan. He had a 620 credit score, and I said, this guy can't get a loan, can he? He said, oh, yeah, we've got this new program where we can get him a loan at a 580 credit score. And I said, really? He said, yeah, they keep lowering it. So we're starting it, and I think it's just, the biggest industry in our country would be the real estate market. And it's a way to really, you know, could make us feel like things are really moving forward, but we could be fooling ourselves. And at that point, you know, we've seen a deep decline in real estate prices. That could be something we could start seeing. If that starts happening, if they truly start making subprime loans, maybe with a different term attached to them, government insured loans or whatever they do, they start making, start trying to bend the numbers to work with people who probably can't afford a loan. You're going to see real estate prices start to skyrocket, and it'll cause a feeding frenzy. You'll start seeing this retail flip market come back strong. And that's something I see happening. I'm already starting to see it happen. I don't know how far it's going to go, but it seems like about every 6 months I hear of a new loan program that it just kind of blows my mind, and I feel like here we go again.
And then what'll happen is we'll have the same problems with the banks and the foreclosures and the bailouts, and everyone's blaming the banks for offering these bad loans, or quote unquote bad loans, yeah. And the cycle kind of starts
all
over
again.
And that wouldn't just be a factor that affects Memphis; that's going to affect the country.
That's right; it'd be a nationwide thing. And like I said, that may not happen, but it wouldn't surprise me if it does.
Time will tell.
That's right.
Well, Craig, you know, you've given us a lot of great insight today, not only into your personal history, but into your professional and business progress as well. Any final closing thoughts?
No, that's it. One thing I will say, before you buy real estate, really make sure you have a good team in place if you're buying from out of country. It's the most important part of it. Make sure the guys that are selling you the property, ask for references. Make sure the people that are managing your company really ask for some people. Your best thing is to get references and check people who are already working with the company and see what they like and dislike. Property management's tough, and it's no management company is perfect. It's a very tough business, but there are some that are definitely better than others. So check references. Check the people out that you're buying from. It is a big investment. It's one that we believe in here. There's a lot of sharks out there in our business, so just do your homework. Kick the tires and go buy some real estate. We feel like it's a superior product to the paper assets out there. A lot less risk, a lot of upside, and something we strongly believe in here.
Now, how can people contact you, Craig? What's your company's website?
It's www.buymemphisnow.com, and that's B U Y MemphisNow.com. And you can go on there, get our contact info, view some properties, and, you know, as always, call our office. Call me on the cell phone.
Or and actually, what is your email address, Craig?
It's craig.jennings1@gmail.com.
And what about your phone number? How can people get in touch with you?
My cell phone number is 901-859-9070. And you can call. We're about every 2 weeks we have investors flying in from California or all over, from New Zealand, Australia. And we're happy to show them the city. And we show them the places we do invest in. We show them the places that we don't invest in and why. And just get them a feel for the city, show them around. And we love doing that. It's one of our favorite things. So, you know, feel free to call, come visit, anything. Check us out. We'll give you references. Be happy to talk about it with you.
Well, Craig, we appreciate your time today. Folks, that's going to do it today for Investor Talk Radio. I'm your host, Kurt Davis. Stay tuned for our next interview.
This show was produced by Kurt Davis and KurtDavisOnline.com. All rights reserved. To reach Kurt Davis, you can find him on the web at www.KurtDavisOnline.com or email him at Kurt@KurtDavisOnline.com. Everything you heard on this show should not be taken as personal or professional advice. You should conduct your own due diligence. Opinions or comments of our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the opinion of Kurt Davis or KurtDavisOnline.com.